This episode is sponsored by Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime. So delicious, so unbelievable. No word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing. It's mouth-blowing. Yeah, you heard me. Bright, citrusy, and spicy. This newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. It was made for a woman like me, and I mean that. I would recommend enjoying Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime as an ice cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic like a spicy daiquiri. Here's a recipe. Thank me later. Pour 1 ounce of Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime into a cocktail shaker with ice, shake for a few seconds, and then pour into a shot glass rimmed with Tajine Chili Lime Sea Salt. Enjoy! Or keep your Captain Morgan Sweet Chili Lime bottle chilling in the fridge before serving ice-cold sweet heat shots. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan Sweet Chili Lime. Premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors. 35% alcohol per volume. Captain Morgan Rum Company. New York, New York.
Direct from the Broski Nation headquarters in Los Angeles, California, this is the Broski Report. With your host, Brittany Broski.
Bienvenue, Broski Nation. Guys, welcome back. Guys, if you're driving, if you're sitting, if you're sleeping, if you're reading, if you are, I don't know, laying, get up. Get up, cocksuckers. It's all over. I'm about to crack this. Listen to this. That was a PBR. It's 9 a.m. I'm just kidding. That's a Red Bull. And I'm about to pour it into my New York bodega cup. Tell me how freaking sweet that is. Y'all, I picked this up in New York last time I was there as a little tourist. I was a tourist. This is just darling. This is what they give you in the bodegas in New York. And it is ceramic. Listen to this. It's ceramic. How freaking cute is that? So I'm about to pour my blueberry Red Bull in my bodega cup because I'm fucking crazy. That clip of Enya, I think of probably once a day. I'm fucking crazy! And then she turns around in silence and goes up the escalator. Yeah. Yeah, I'm fucking crazy. Wow. Guys, Red 40? More like, what's in this? Red Bull, you better fess up, bitch. What's in this? It just says color. Ingredients, color. Oh, I'm not worried about how that's going to affect my body in the next 10 to 15 years at all. What is the color in Red Bull? Ew! There was a big fly that just, that wasn't a fly, that was like a moth. Did you see that in the video? That was a huge bug. Ew, it's on the desk! What do I do? Okay. All right. There's been a murder. The first murder of the Broski Report. We come to you live tonight to report the sudden and gruesome murder of a bug that flew towards my face, and now its carcass is forever going to be on that desk because I'm not going to clean that up. In case you forget, I don't have a producer or a cleaning crew or a janitorial service that comes through here. It's me, bitch. I'm all of those. So that carcass is going to stay right there indefinitely. And I wonder if you can see it on the screen. Oh, I had a big screen installed right here behind camera one. So if I'm more wall-eyed than usual, it's because I'm looking up here. Okay, I'm looking up here at my big white face. My God, I had a dream last night that I got sunburnt. And that is as close as I'm getting to the sun. Okay. It has been so long since I have, like, stood in the sunlight. I am so white. I am so pale. And usually, I mean, I'm a very pinky white person. Usually I've got some color to me. Oh, my sweet God. I have never been this white. I truly, it ruins outfits. I'm like, I can't. Anyway. Okay, the Red Bull energy drink cans are blue and silver. Yeah, I know what the fucking can color is. What is the color? Red Bull colors ingredients. Red Bull energy drink contains colors that come from a safe source of food colors. Food dyes are usually present in such small amounts that they don't contribute to anything in terms of calories, sugar, or nutrition. Yeah, that's not what I'm worried about, bitch. I'm worried about the cancerous, carcinogenic qualities of it. Oh, so Red Bull's banned at Whole Foods, apparently? All right, this is not this is not making me feel great. Okay, guys, what are we talking about today? Today, I come to you with Brittany Broski's literary reviews, okay? I finished this monolith, okay? I finished The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath. I have thoughts. I talked about this a few episodes ago where I talked about how I tried to start Metamorphosis by Kafka and The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath, and I was like, I want to read about dragons fucking each other. Guys, are we not allowed to change and grow? Are we not allowed to mature? Are we not allowed to abandon the shell of who I was yesterday to emerge victorious into the butterfly that I will be today? Am I not allowed to have a cocoon of betterment? Or is that, I guess, outlawed? In Broski Nation, it's legal. In Broski Nation, you're allowed to become the better version of yourself every day, and you are gifted the opportunity to do with the new day what you see fit. Okay? That being said, I read The Bell Jar. I have thoughts. Okay? You know, a lot of Broski Nation members are very, very educated. And some of you are not, and that's okay, because that's what this podcast is for. I'm here to help, okay? And I'm not saying I'm the authority on this book or its literary sort of, you know, the ripple effect of a book like this, which was her only major novel that she published in her lifetime. She sadly died a few, I think, months after this book was published, at her own hand, which is a tragic sort of poetic ending to what I'm about to get into with this book. So I'm not, obviously, like, don't, I'm not, guys, shut up. There's a lot going on. I am not the authority on this book or its significance or its critiques or anything like that. I'm here to share my thoughts and, you know, feel free to sort of let me know in the comments below. And if you haven't read it, I would say it's worth a read. I rated it 3 out of 5 stars on my Goodreads. And I started East of Eden last night by John Steinbeck because I've been talking about it for months. And guys, you can talk the talk, but are you doing the do? Are you getting her done? And that's the question I'm here to pose to you today, America. Are you here to get her done or are you here to yap the yap? So, Bell Jar. Let's just get into it. So the premise of The Bell Jar is that it is a young woman, a young mentally ill woman who feels trapped under an invisible bell jar, okay? And if you've never seen a bell jar, imagine from Beauty and the Beast, it's what he keeps over the rose, that magic rose. That is a bell jar. And bell jars were common in scientific experiments to create a vacuum over, you know, whatever they were testing. It creates a vacuum. So the implication here, when a bell jar is symbolically placed around a human woman, is that it breeds isolation, it breeds suffocation, and, you know, in Esther Greenwood's case, who is the protagonist in this book, it breeds suicidal ideation, which is common. These are all common symptoms of depression and paranoia, which is what the main character suffered from. This book, with all of its controversies, with all of its, you know, I mean, this book was published in the 50s. There were parts of this book that were hard to read. You know, with a 21st century, even like a 2024 mindset, obviously it's going to be controversial. It's going to be outdated. It's going to be prejudiced. It's going to be racist, homophobic. All those things are very true about this book. And I feel the need to, before I get into the larger plot and all that, I feel the need to say the simple truth that Sylvia Plath was a white feminist, okay? Not a lot of space for intersectional feminism in this book. Not a lot of, she left a lot to be imagined when it comes to, you know, liberation for all women. It is a very white feminist book, and that kind of goes, well, not goes without saying, but within the first 20 pages of the book, it's like, ah, I see what's going on here. It was hard to read at times, like most classics are, because not academically. It's not academically hard to read. It was emotionally hard to sort of relate or try to put yourself in the position of the main character, because it's like, that's crazy. You feel sympathetic for her through her mental struggles, but to hold such prejudiced views at the same time, it's like, oh my God. It's a very, look, okay? Take that for what it's worth. Okay, so Esther Greenwood is the protagonist in this book. Like I said, she struggles with paranoia and depression. She gets an internship in New York City. She moves to New York City and experiences the hustle and bustle of this glamorous life as a fashion intern at this magazine. And, you know, she sees some of her peers excel and sort of give in to the culture and society. And then she finds herself kind of misplaced, you know, kind of detached from what's going on. The internship ends. She moves home to Massachusetts, where the depression really kicks up. It really kicks up. It flares up. You know that feeling of when you're back home in your childhood bedroom with your parents, living under your parents' roof after such an exciting summer or opportunity, and it starts to spiral out of control. She goes to see this scene was tea, bitch. She goes to see a psychologist or someone to try to diagnose her mental state and try to help her. This doctor, I think, is the scene almost felt satirical with how accurate it was. It's a male doctor, and she goes and sits down, and she describes this room as being very medical, very clinical. There's no windows. There's like fake plants, whatever. The doctor comes in. He's very handsome. He's very charming, and he's all cheery. And you know what? See, your mother tells me there's something fucking wrong with you. What? Explain. And so she explains, you know, like, I can't sleep. I can't read. I can't eat. I can't do anything. I feel paralyzed by this state I find myself in of like nothing fucking matters. And I wish that I could die. And he goes, what college did you say you went to again? And she says it. And then he goes on some personal anecdote about how, oh yeah, I used to, you know, during the war, this happened at that college. Interesting. All right. Same time next week. And it's almost, and she walks out and she goes to the car and here's her expectant, hopeful mother of like, well, what did he say? You know, what can be done about my child's suffering? And then she tells her, he just said what time next week and, you know, kind of put his hand out metaphorically for money. And that is so, and I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer, but unfortunately, that is the lived reality for a lot of people who go to therapy or go to seek treatment or help for a mental condition, especially think about the context of the 50s. You know, I mean, it was just dismal. These facilities and the so-called help that these patients were given or suggested. And if it wasn't being over-medicated, it was shock therapy, which, I mean, this isn't, if you know about this, you know about this, go do your own research. I'm not going to sit here and try to like give a lecture on how destitute mental health resources were in the 50s, especially how prejudiced they were towards minorities and the gay community. All that kind of, go read about it. It's haunting and devastating. Also, there's this weird trend now of, I mean, obviously it's kind of a meme at this point of lobotomies and all this, but this book kind of gives a glimpse, a sort of pulling back the screen door, looking into the reality of what electroshock therapy and lobotomies looked like and what failed lobotomies looked like. There's a scene where the mom goes in to talk to the doctor. I'm giving spoilers if you have, hey, it's been published since 1950, okay? Maybe go read it. I'm spoiling it if you haven't read it. She goes in to talk to the doctor, the mom does, and she's like, you know, they're discussing options and how the treatment's going and whatever, and the doctor recommends that Esther visits a facility, goes and stays at a facility for a while that's out of town, and the mom knows what this means. And they drive her to this facility, and upon entering, you know, it feels like this, oh, it's this rich sort of estate out in the country. It's real nice. And then you walk in, and there's all these patients in the room. Silent. You can hear a pin drop. Everyone is in this vegetative state. And you come to find out soon enough why. It's because this doctor is malpracticing, and it is electroshock therapy that is A, not being done right, B, is at the hands of this almost narcissist. I don't know if Dr. Gordon is a narcissist, but he is described as being very handsome, very charming, and then like look at his patients. So I don't know. It's chilling the way that she describes this first visit to this facility, where it's like these patients are, someone was making decisions for them. The next scene is kind of, and the sad part about this book is it's very modeled after Sylvia's own life. A lot of the parts are. She's flubbed names and flubbed, you know, things like that. But I don't know, when you write a book like this, it seems so deeply personal, because it was. And she gets sponsored by this rich woman who reads in the paper that Esther tried to kill herself, and it was not successful, and she was hospitalized. And so she decides to sponsor her and put her up in this really nice facility for rich mentally ill people. That's where Esther ends up going. And it sort of chronicles her experience through that, and how she gets to this state that she's not healed necessarily, but socially enough, I guess she's fine. And I don't know, it's very, the way that the book ends is very like, I guess that's it, isn't it? That's how it goes. Is if you've struggled with mental health like that, it's such a curvy road, and there are good days and there are horrible days. And it just, you know, you take it as it goes, and she lands on this place that's like, I don't know, there's so much symbolism in it, and I mean, I could spend 2 hours talking about it. I won't, I need to get to other things. But what I will say is, everyone, when you talk about The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath, upon describing even the title of the book, I feel like a lot of people can relate to it, you know, of feeling like disillusioned with life and disillusioned with the hand you've been dealt. And is it a me problem, or is it a society problem? Is it a technology problem? Is it a social media problem? Is it this problem? Is it being over-medicated from a young age sort of problem? All these things are swirling around in the zeitgeist of the conversation around mental health. And here, it's interesting because this is from 70 years ago, upwards of 70 years ago. And I'm reading some of the words on this page, and through all my qualms with this book, I'm relating to the basis of what she's saying, which is, some days I want to disappear and I feel like I'm not good enough. And God, if the world could just shut the fuck up, you know, like, I don't want to be here. I'm so sad. But then some days it's not like that, you know, and it's just, I think she does a really good job of putting pen to paper about what that indescribable feeling is, and how it's dismissed by a lot of people as being not real.
This episode is sponsored by Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime. So delicious, so unbelievable. No word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing. It's mouth-blowing. Yeah, you heard me. Bright, citrusy, and spicy. This newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. It was made for a woman like me, and I mean that. I would recommend enjoying Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime as an ice cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic like a spicy daiquiri. Here's a recipe. Thank me later. Pour 1 ounce of Captain Morgan Sweet Chili Lime into a cocktail shaker with ice, shake for a few seconds, and then pour into a shot glass rimmed with Tajin Chili Lime Sea Salt. Enjoy! Or keep your Captain Morgan Sweet Chili Lime bottle chilling in the fridge before serving ice-cold sweet heat shots. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan Sweet Chili Lime. Premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors. 35% alcohol per volume. Captain Morgan, Rum Company, New York, New York.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more.
Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
So, I can't talk about The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath without talking about the fig tree metaphor, which I have highlighted, of course, and I will read for you now. If you've never heard this, this is very iconic, and I relate to it. I'm sure a lot of you can as well. Now, the internet would love to tell you that,
oh, this is a symptom of ADHD. This is a symptom of ADHD. You just take Adderall and you'll be okay.
And part of me is like, that might be true. Maybe I need to take Adderall. And then the other part of me is like, no, you need to be more self-disciplined. And then the other part of me is like, well, the TikTokers know what they... No, don't listen to fucking TikTok. But then part of me is like, you can't trust doctors. So I'm like swirling around. I don't have a solution for this. I'm telling you that I read this and I really, 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 really relate to it. And I don't know if that makes me a basic bitch. I don't know if that makes me any sort of negative nominer. I don't know. Here is the passage. I saw my life branching out before me like the green fig tree in the story. From the tip of every branch, like a fat purple fig, a wonderful future beckoned and winked. One fig was a husband and a happy home and children. Another fig was a famous poet. And another fig was a brilliant professor. And another fig was E.G., the amazing editor. And another fig was Europe and Africa and South America. And another fig was Constantine and Socrates and Attila and a pack of other lovers with queer names and offbeat professions. And another fig was an Olympic lady crew champion. And beyond and above these figs were many more figs I couldn't quite make out. I saw myself sitting in the crotch of this fig tree, starving to death, just because I couldn't make up my mind which of the figs I would choose. I wanted each and every one of them, but choosing one meant losing all the rest. And as I sat there, unable to decide, the figs began to wrinkle and go black. And one by one, they plopped to the ground at my feet. Okay, so. Like, right. Okay, holy fuck. So. I struggle with that a lot, where I want to do so many things, and I want to do them well. And I'm afraid of trying, and I'm afraid of starting. And when you really zoom out to a bird's eye view, why are you afraid? What is there possibly to be afraid of, other than the obvious reason of failure? You know, you don't want to fail. But even if you fail, that's an experience, and you take facts and truths from those experiences, and you move on, and you try other things. And hopefully those things will be a success. But I don't even know, beyond the fear of failure, it's like this inability to self-start. Damn, guys, we're getting serious and real. I've got the bell jar open. We're doing class popcorn reading about fear of failure and depression. Hey! Hey, team! Bienvenue. I think for me, I've talked about this a lot before, of this compulsion I have to be a Renaissance woman. I want to be a Renaissance woman. I want to try. I want to die in a mental state where I have no regrets and I have tried everything that I wanted to try. Even if I wasn't good at it, even if I failed at it, even if I embarrassed myself trying to do it, I tried it. And I struggle with that right now of, I want to start, but I can't. A lot of that also is just paralysis by social media. I try not to chalk it up to, oh, your serotonin and dopamine levels, and you need to self-discipline because you've been taught that, you know, you can get those same feelings by just scrolling. And all that's true, but like, that's not reason enough to not try. And for the longest time, I've let that be the reason why I haven't tried, is that any fulfillment I could get from sitting down and trying to write prose, trying to write poetry, trying to write a song, trying to write the concept for a book, trying to write anything like that, trying to create in a way that isn't this or a YouTube video, which those are very fun, silly things, trying to create something that's in earnest, an artistic piece that's just for me. I stop myself before I can even begin. And why? And fuck TikTok, because TikTok was the genesis of it, I think. When I think back to 2019 of the scrolling that I used to do, I used to be able to sit down and like watch a YouTube video to its completion. I cannot do that now. I don't know. Y'all feel me? Are y'all rocking with what I'm saying, team? Here's another passage. Here's another bell jar passage for you fuckers. I knew I should be grateful to Mrs. Guinea, only I couldn't feel a thing. If Mrs. Guinea had given me a ticket to Europe or a round-the-world cruise, it wouldn't have made one scrap of difference to me, because wherever I sat, on the deck of a ship or at a street cafe in Paris or Bangkok, I would be sitting under the same glass bell jar, stewing in my own sour air. Okay? Would I recommend the bell jar? I would say it's one of those that you should have under your belt. I don't know if it's crucial. I would say it's an important feminist piece of literature, albeit white feminism, which there are much better feminist books you could read. I don't know. That this one always comes up in the conversation, and so it was interesting. It's very character-driven. It's not very plot-driven. By the end of it, I was like, okay, so what's the resolution? You know, what's to be taken away from this story other than a more detailed, in-depth description of depressive and paranoid symptoms? It helps articulate those feelings. So that's my bell jar rant. Towards the end of Sylvia Plath's life, she was working on, I think it was a thesis, or she was just doing research for the double personalities in Dostoevsky works. Now, I wanted to take the opportunity to Google this with you guys. Double personality, Dostoevsky. 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 How to pronounce
Dostoevsky.
Yeah, I'm so smart. Now you know we're hitting up Quora.gov. Come on, team. When literary critics talk about dual personalities in Dostoevsky's work, like Raskolnikovic from Crime and Punishment. Have y'all read Crime and Punishment? Everyone on fucking Book Talk is like, read Crime and Punishment. I will one day. Let me work my way there is basically what I'm trying to say. Getting through the classics is an endeavor, and I have to intermingle it with sci-fi and fantasy and, you know, like just a good story. Not to say Crime and Punishment and all these classics aren't good stories, but it is more of an academic study for me of, you know, there's a reason that these books are taught and lectured on in a collegiate academic context, that I want to give it its due process of taking away what I need to from these books. So I want to give it more time and care than I would, you know, a fun novel, like an ACOTAR or whatever like that, where that's, you can sit down and enjoy it and it doesn't take that much brain power. These I want to dedicate time to. That's why I put it off. It's the fucking fig tree, dude. I'm just putting it off because I'd like to say that I'm one of those people that has read all these books, but in earnest, I find it difficult to sit down and try and to sit down and start. So, when literary critics talk about dual personalities in Dostoevsky's work, what do they mean? Are they talking about characters with two personalities? And now here is an answer. When literary critics refer to dual personalities in the context of Dostoevsky's work, they are not necessarily suggesting that these characters have two distinct personalities in the way we might think of dissociative identity disorder. Instead, they are often pointing to a deeper complexity in the character's psychological makeup. In Dostoevsky's novels, characters like Raskolnikov are often depicted as having conflicting or contradictory aspects to their personality. These characters may struggle with internal conflicts, moral dilemmas, or existential crises that lead them to experience inner turmoil and psychological tension. This inner conflict can manifest as a duality in their thoughts, emotions, and actions. To me, that sounds like basic human hypocrisy. Like, we're all hypocrites. For example, Raskolnikov in Crime and Punishment is a complex character who grapples with ideas of morality, guilt, and justification for his actions. He experiences a profound internal struggle between his rational, intellectual side that justifies his crime as a means to a greater end, and his conscience that is plagued by guilt and remorse. The notion of dual personalities in his works often refer to the intricate psychological depth of his characters. Some people are saying that it's more ambivalence, not meaning indifference, but holding two competing thoughts simultaneously. He is at first glance a very superficial character, but it changes as you see the struggle within himself to both understand who he is and to understand the world around him. He is a blind man, unable to move forward with his life, because to move forward is tempting fate. His murders were more of an effort to control his own life. Not necessarily the murder, but the desire to be caught. He is a man that feels like he is in prison, but the world around him seems to be free. To recover his sanity, he either must free himself or be in prison. It's not that his personality was his opposition, but his desires were. Interesting. Okay. Don't know. Right. Don't care. What is Crime and Punishment about? Need to read it. We, like, skipped over this for some reason in English Lit. Probably because it's not English. Hey, that would make sense. Crime and Punishment is a novel by the Russian author, Fyodor Dostoevsky.
This episode is sponsored by Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime. So delicious, so unbelievable. No word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing. It's mouth-blowing. Yeah, you heard me. Bright, citrusy, and spicy. This newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. It was made for a woman like me, and I mean that. I would recommend enjoying Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime as an ice cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic like a spicy daiquiri. Here's a recipe. Thank me later. Pour 1 ounce of Captain Morgan Sweet Chili Lime into a cocktail shaker with ice, shake for a few seconds, and then pour into a shot glass rimmed with Tajin Chili Lime Sea Salt. Enjoy! Or keep your Captain Morgan Sweet Chili Lime bottle chilling in the fridge before serving ice-cold sweet heat shots. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan Sweet Chili Lime. Premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors. 35% alcohol per volume. Captain Morgan, Rum Company, New York, New York.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Welcome back to Broski AP Literature. Okay, today we're doing Crime and Punishment takeaways. The lesson learned is the importance of humility and self-awareness, as well as the recognition that no one is above moral principles. It's also the power of guilt and redemption. Crime and Punishment explores the transformative power of guilt and the possibility of redemption. Sounds vaguely Catholic to me. Okay, lit class over. We're going to talk about Bridgerton now. Guys, Bridgerton! I finished season 2 right before season 3 came out. So, like, I came around just in time. Everyone was like, you need to watch Bridgerton. You'd really like it. You don't know me. You don't know what I'd like. Guess what? I love it. Okay. So I'm pissed off. Finish season 2 now. Imagine the horror and gut-wrenching devastation I felt upon realizing that Jonathan Bailey is living as a gay man. What the fuck? What the fuck? How are you going to yearn over a woman like that? Even acting. And then you're going to live life as a gay man? Wrong. Wrong. Oh, my sweet Jesus. You know what Bridgerton made me realize? No one's ever liked me. No one has ever liked me like that, dude. What? Bring back insatiable yearning. I say it every single episode. bring back yearning. Unabashed, unembarrassed, shameless yearning. I sure as hell do it. Okay? Normalize male yearning. We are on a campaign tour right now across America, across the seven seas. Normalize male yearning. Guys, you're not hearing me when I speak. I want to see begging on knees. I want to see clasped fists like this. I want to hear, please, please. Okay? Male yearning is back in a big way this summer. Coming back to a theater near you. From the 19th century, we're bringing back male yearning. We're bringing back women's ankles in a big way. We're bringing back holding a man's bicep, okay? Good night. So many of those men in Bridgerton just have those, it's that perfect level of arm muscle where it's like, I don't know, you can kind of see the outline when their arms are unflexed. And then the minute they, girl, it's just a big bicep. Oh, 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 oh. I feel like fucking Penn Badgley from, what's that show? Easy A. Oh my God. Another day, another failed Bechdel test. Another day, another failure. Good night. Some of those men need to be detained in Bridgerton. I was not a Colin Bridgerton believer. I am a Benedict Bridgerton believer. I am a Benedict Bridgerton ally. Oh my God. Of course I like the kind of gay artsy one. Of course I like the funny, unserious, kind of gay swinger artsy one. What the fuck? Oh, from that first season when he went to that swinger party and he met the one gay dude in the show. Of course I like that one. That's my man. Also, how is he the second oldest and he looks the oldest? How is Anthony supposed to be older than him, but Benedict's supposed to be younger than... What, bro? Benedict's a dilf. I need him so bad. Is the actor who plays... Who plays Benedict Bridgerton? It's going to be Luke Thompson. Luke Thompson wife. Girlfriend. Fuck, she's beautiful. God damn it. I wish you both a happy life together. I wish you both a very happy life together. I am going to hide my horror and misery at this news. Bridgerton star Luke Thompson, wife, career, married, net worth, and more. When was he born? 1988. Oh my God. He's 22. How long ago was 1988? How old is this? I'm not going to sit here and try to do that math. How old is Luke Thompson? 35. Need him. Oh, he's perfect for me. What the fuck? What is wrong with you? He's a little twunk. Dude! What the fuck? Oh, I need him. Oh, I need him. Oh, I need him. I need it. That SpongeBob meme. Water. I need it. Oh, my sweet Lord, dude.
This episode is sponsored by Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime. So delicious, so unbelievable. No word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing. It's mouth-blowing. Yeah, you heard me. Bright, citrusy, and spicy. This newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. It was made for a woman like me, and I mean that. I would recommend enjoying Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime as an ice cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic like a spicy daiquiri. Here's a recipe. Thank me later. Pour 1 ounce of Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime into a cocktail shaker with ice, shake for a few seconds, and then pour into a shot glass rimmed with Tajin Chili Lime Sea Salt. Enjoy!
Or keep your Captain Morgan Sweet Chili Lime bottle chilling in the fridge before serving ice-cold Sweet Heat shots. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan Sweet Chili Lime. Premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors. 35% alcohol per volume. Captain Morgan Rum Company. New York, New York.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Okay, Benedict Bridgerton. If season 3.5, I haven't even gotten to Penelope and Colin. Just give me a second, okay? Let me work through this. Anthony and Kate in season 2. My campaign to bring back male yearning starts now. I need you guys pushing this. I need you guys lobbying this. I need you guys making buttons, stickers, pins, flags. We're selling this concept, and this is a message I really believe in. Bring back male yearning. I'm sick of the dating apps. I'm sick of the sexualization and objectification. The 4B movement, yes. How about the BBMY movement? That needs to happen simultaneously. We're boycotting men until they learn how to yearn. Good night, dude. Okay. That was season 2. Really enjoyed the forbidden love. Forbidden love, ex enemies to lovers, ex interracial couple, ex ex Duchess and Duke, ex Bridgerton collab. Really, really obsessed with that, dude. I miss it. There's another bug on the wall. Why does this room have so many bugs? No, please. Bring the bug out, please. Remember that time I was filming and a big spider crawled up the desk? What the fuck? Okay. Season 2, loved it. Cried, okay? Season 3. Now, Miss Penelope. Miss Penelope is a mess. She is messy, girl. And can I say something troubling? Can I speak? Lord Debling would. Lord Debling, need him. Lord Debling was the obvious choice. Colin Bridgerton, Penelope's better than me because I would have been like, Colin, get the fuck away from me. May I interrupt for dance? No, bitch, that's my husband. That is literally toxic ex-situationship coming back when he sees you're in a relationship. That is absolutely, that they are trying to chalk this up to be some romantic thing. Dude. Colin is toxic. You had all that time to realize Penelope's worth, and you're going to wait until she's about to get proposed to? You're a bitch! Don't piss me off, Colin Bridgerton. Oh my God. When he did that, when he's, you can't marry him. Why not? Give me one good reason. Because you were too puss to ask me or to even realize that I was a worthy woman to be suited. I was worthy this whole time. Nothing changed. Okay? Oh, Colin pissed me off. Even after the carriage scene, I was like, he's still pissing me off. I don't care. I don't care. I'll never forgive him. Even though the carriage scene. Yeah, fuck you, Colin Bridgerton. Even though. Okay, so Lord Debling. Man, off the bat, they were hitting it off. And even that scene where she goes up to him and she's like, I haven't been honest with you. I have been someone that I am not in the hopes to impress you. And that is not the foundation to build a relationship on. And I'm sorry. And I understand if you no longer want to court me. And his reaction is, oh my God, that it endears me to you more. You know, we often try so hard to fit in, but the best matches are made when you are earnestly yourself. And they're, ooh, about to fall in love, okay? And even, I mean, she was like rationalizing it too. He travels a lot. He's gone. I like my privacy.
Because she's motherfucking Lady Whistledown.
She's got to have her stew. She's got to cook in the stew. Okay? She doesn't need a man all up in her business with all his dead animals. Get out of here. I literally, oh my God, I would have been happy if the season ended with her and Lord Dibbling. I kind of was like, wait, I'm rocking with this. A sensible match. A sensible, respectful, lovable match. Now, Colin Bridgerton, toxic. Now, is it everything Penelope has wanted? Yes. But look what she lost to gain Colin. And with Colin being so fickle, I don't know, dude. I don't know. I'm very, of course, they're going to get married and all that. But are they going to fight? I don't know. Penelope likes to fight. is she going to beat on him? I don't know. I'm worried. And I'm worried that this is the end of that story. Like, are they just done with Colin and Penelope and they're going to move on to hopefully Benedict? Hopefully Benedict? God, I need to see Benedict yearn. He has not yearned. He has been interested, and he's very flirty and playful. Of course I like that one, okay? Of course I like the one that's, he's flirty and witty and bandy. But he's not yearning. I need to see someone on their knees. Get on the ground, Maggot! I want to see you yearn like your life depends on it! Not seeing that from Benedict. Need to see it. Come on, Benny. Come on, Benny. Show us what you got. Come on, old pal. Anyway, dude, I bought the Billie Eilish perfume tester. They sell this one at Ulta that's like half of it's Billie Eilish fragrance number one, half of it's fragrance number two. One of them smells like that. Billie Eilish one smells like the vanilla musk oil. The you know what I'm talking about? It's the little fragrance oil with the gold screw cap with the like red and green label. It smells like that, but less intense and as a rollerball perfume. And then the second one, I don't even know how to describe it. It just smells like the perfume section at a mall. And so I've been trying them. And I've been layering them with Angel Share by Killian. And then Amber Vanille by Laura Mercier, the lotion, which they changed the formula on and I'm pissed off. So all that, it's a very vanilla, you know, you want to smell like a rich sugar cupcake, lollipop cotton candy. But it doesn't smell like Victoria's Secret Claire's, you know what I mean? Like that sort of cheap vanilla. It's a very rich, mature vanilla. But I don't know. I keep getting a whiff of it and I don't know if I like it. Maybe this is like, I don't need to wear it when I'm sweating with no muumuu, like with no bra under my muumuu filming the podcast. This is like, I need to go out and be sipping on an espresso martini with a push-up bra on. That's what this gives. There is so much sweat under my boobs right now. This perfume is just, it's kind of making me nauseous. There's a lot happening sensory-wise on my body right now. And I'm just, this big screen's also distracting me. And I'm worried that I'm looking wall-eyed, okay? I'm worried that I'm kind of giving wall-eyed really quick. So let me know about that. Let me know if I can fix it. Guys, how to fix being wall-eyed. How to fix being wall-eyed. Surgically adjusting the tension on the eye muscles. Fuck. Does anyone know any good wall-eye surgeons? Glasses sometimes can sometimes correct mild strabismus. Strabitmus. I got strabitmus in my eyeballs. Mary strabitmus. And some glasses have prisms that can help with symptoms. Bifocal lenses. Symptoms? Well, I can see fine. My eyes are just pointing two different directions. What I'm working with is about 180 degree sphere of vision. Most people are limited. I would say most people have 90 degrees, okay? 45 degree angles of vision. I'm working with about 180. Okay, I'm looking over here and here. You don't need to worry about me. And on top of that, they're bulging, so maybe they can go around a little bit. Okay, maybe 280. 280 degrees of vision. Oh! Eye muscle surgery. What are we talking about? Can realign the eyes by loosening or tightening the eye muscles and is usually performed as an outpatient procedure. Surgically adjusting the tension on the eye muscles. I don't know about all that. Luke Thompson would love me whether I was wall-eyed or not. God, he's so handsome. We need to start asking that. Would you love me if I was a worm? Would you love me if my eyes went in two completely different directions? Because they do. That's not a joke. How to fix being wall-eyed.
a crazy Google search on my end. Sorry, team.
Okay. Oh, this is what I also wanted to say on Bridgerton season 2. The girl who plays Edwina is such a good actress. Like, she's the best actress out of the whole season. I believed every word that came out of her mouth. Okay? I did not miss Daphne's annoying ass, even though I do love Daphne. Her ass was so annoying in season 1. Like, what are you even toiling about? There was so much worrying in season 1. Why? The answer is clear. You knew they were going to end up together. Don't piss me off. She's not really annoying. She's super mature and she's like living her happy life with her little baby. But I don't know. In season 1, she annoyed me. I wrote this note when I started episode 1 of season 3 before I finished it. I wrote, started episode 1 of season 3. Colin's arrogant ass needs to shut the fuck up, bitch, and sit the fuck down, bitch. Poofy ass hair. Don't piss me off. You look like Johnny Bravo. Shut the fuck up, bitch, and sit the fuck down, bitch. Poofy ass hair. Don't piss me off. Me writing that, like, gotta say it on the podcast. Okay. That's my Bridgerton tea. Here are my hopes for the second part. Number one, I get to go to the premiere because I have got to talk to Luke Thompson. Luke Thompson, give me a chance. I can make a happy life for us. Luke Thompson, please give me a chance. I need a man in a pirate blouse. No! Dude, a man in a pirate blouse, that's more dopamine and serotonin than any TikTok could ever give me. A man with curly dark hair and brown eyes in a pirate blouse? God, I'm about to fall out. I'm about to start chewing. I need a chew toy. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I need a chew toy. I need a teething ring. Me, when I think about men in pirate shirts, I need a teething ring. Okay. What else was I going to talk about here? For Bridgerton season 3 part 2, if it's not about Benedict, I'm going to be woefully, woefully angry. I'm going to be filled with rage. I need to see the Planet of the Apes movie, and I'm worried that I'm going to be very sexually attracted to the monkey. That is a fear of mine that I have to verbalize. I have to see the movie, and I am deeply, deeply unsettled by the fact that I know I will be sexually attracted to the monkey. I don't know what that says about me. Sexually and emotionally attracted to Caesar. Why would you pick a hot name, too? I'm devastated. I haven't even seen it, dude. I haven't even... The original ones with Mark Wahlberg? Why was Mark Wahlberg in Planet of the Apes? Aren't you supposed to be making burgers, bro? Get your ass in the kitchen, bro. Why are you playing with the monkeys? Why are you playing with the apes? Get off of their planet. You've got to go make some Wahlburgers. Now! We need a SpongeBob reboot Wahlburgers edition. And it's animated in the style of BoJack Horseman, and we've got Donnie and Mark Wahlberg absolutely flipping the burgers. Actually, who's the brother that actually works there? The chef? God, they had his ass stressed out. Oh my God, I remember when I watched Wahlburgers for the first time? I was like, they have left this man to die in the trenches. And Donnie and Mark will come in there and be like, how's it going? Man, Bob, bust your balls. And the brother's like balding, about to have a neurotic nervous breakdown. And then they're like, all right, go back and flipping some fucking burgers. And he's like, I don't know, we're going to keep the business alive. And he fucking, chef, yes, chef, yes, chef. The Bear was based on Wahlburgers season 1. I promise you, they had my boy stressed out to the maximum. Who's the brother that runs Wahlburgers? Chef Paul Wahlberger and his... Oh, Paul Wahlberg. Is owned by Chef Paul Wahlberg and his brothers, actors Donnie and Mark. Okay. Paul Wahlberg. I'm like thinking about some of these scenes. They had him on the
the verge of suicide. He was so stressed out. And then they just leave him. He is so cute, isn't he? Wow. Okay. He's just a man that loves a good burger. He is just a simple man that loves a good slab of red meat. I need to meet Paul Wahlberger. I need to meet him. Like, I feel like a part of me would heal if I got to meet Stanley Tucci and Paul Wahlberg. I'm actually about to cry thinking about it. I want to meet them. Wait, I feel very emotionally attached to Paul Wahlberger. What the fuck? I have to find this clip of him being stressed. Like, what the hell? Paul Wahlberg, stressed out. Come on, dude. I just feel very spiritually connected to Paul Wahlberger. He feels like a very ambitious, like, serious type A, like, I need to get this shit done. Like, he has his passions and his brothers just dick around and he's just like, leave me to do my shit. Like, if you're not here to help, get out of here. That and Stanley Tucci, I've talked about this series before. I recommend it to anyone I ever meet. Stanley Tucci did a series called Searching for Italy. Is there a new season? Oh, no. Y'all, this show got 89% on Google, 8.6 out of 10 on IMDb, 78% on Rotten Tomatoes, period, dude. Stanley Tucci, God. Here's the promo. Let's watch the promo.
We're hungry, right?
Starving. Get in Tucci with your Italian side. When in Rome,
you don't live without pasta.
Eat as the Romans do.
On a tantalizing tour, sure to tempt your taste buds.
Oh my God. Just one of the most delicious things on earth.
This is made with love.
With the pork and the risotto.
Yeah, it's very tasty.
That's so good.
I'd like to see Stanley Tucci eat a Twinkie. I'd like to see Stanley Tucci eat hamburger helper. Stanley Tucci, this is my formal invitation for you to come to my house, come to my kitchen, watch me cook hamburger helper, watch me cook the simplest of meals, and I want to sit down and I want to watch you eat it. I'm going to cook it. I'm going to plate it just right. I'm going to grab it with the tongs and, like, you know, how they do it. And then I'm going to garnish it with a fucking leaf of basil. And I'm going to scoot it across the table to you on one of those rich people plates that's ceramic with the little lip on the end where it looks almost like a bowl, but it's a plate. I'm going to scoot it across the table to you. I'm going to flip my chef's towel on my shoulder and I'm going to sit here and make eye contact with you as you eat it. And I'm not going to tell him that it's hamburger helper. I'm going to say, here we have a lovely pasta dish. This is a pasta dish made with free-range organic turkey. Turkey meat that I have so beautifully and lovingly chopped with my own hands, chopped, minced with garlic, basil, right, some various herbs. Thrown this into a pot together with a sort of cream base with a little bit of natural cheese. Whipped that up, bring it to a boiling point, let it simmer, let it solidify. I've taken this and I've plated it on a beautiful signature Italian ceramic plate. And here, it is still warm. We've warmed the plate in the oven for you. Please be careful in touching it. Here is a fork. Please let us know how you enjoy it. And I want him to sit there and I want his ass to lie and be like, a free-range organic turkey, you said. Wow. No, I can taste it. I can taste it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that is just delicious. You said this is a family recipe? Yes. Yes, it is a family recipe. Yes, it is. Thank you. Who owns Hamburger Helper? Eagle Family Food Group. General Mills. It is a Mills family recipe. Yes, please. Please enjoy. And if you'd like some more, please allow me to get some for you. And then on the side, I'm going to say, and I've prepared this lovely fruit cocktail for you. Now, the bubbles you're experiencing are of a natural sort.
It's blueberry Red Bull.
Are of a natural sort. The carbonation comes from the fermented quality of the fruit juice. Please do enjoy. And it has a sort of energetic quality to it as well, to stimulate your mind as you eat the Mills family recipe. Now what Stanley Tucci doesn't know is I've just served him 4-cheese lasagna hamburger helper with a fucking blueberry Red Bull over ice. And he would never know. He would be none the wiser. And that is my biggest shit about these food critics, okay? If it's good, it's good. It doesn't matter who made it. It doesn't matter what's in it, where it came from. If it's good, it's good. Hamburger Helper is good. I'll die on this hill. Is it good for you? Fuck no. Is Red Bull good for you? Fuck no. My God. Okay, but it sure is delicious. Stanley Tucci, come to my house. I'm going to prepare you a 5-course meal. 1, Twinkies. Start with dessert first. Why not? Maybe Twinkies and a zebra cake. Cosmic brownie. I'll do it as a little appetizer sampler. Next, we're going to make some air fryer egg rolls. Or, no. Air fryer taquitos. Taquitos, I love taquitos. I grew up eating taquitos. What's that brand? Frozen taquitos. It's that one brand, and I get the chicken and cheese ones. Yeah, bro. Bitch, Jose Ole. Jose Ole and El Monterrey. Oh, and yeah, these. El Monterrey. That's the ones I get. Chicken and cheese. Bitch, these I lived on in college. I lived on when I worked my first job. I lived on it when I first moved to LA. Because guess what? They're cheap. They're delicious. And here's my secret. You dip them in ranch. Okay? I used to dip them in salsa, guacamole. That's good too. I love a really salty, limey guacamole. Bitch, dip them in ranch. See about that. See about that. Come see about that. I would give Stanley Tucci an air fryer taquito. Now for course 3, I would probably serve some form of soup. I would serve him probably Wendy's chili. I would serve Stanley Tucci Wendy's chili. I hope we're keeping a tally of this. Can we keep it up on the screen? 3rd course, Wendy's chili. And I would garnish it with some fresh green onions, with some fresh grated cheddar cheese. And by fresh grated, I mean Great Value, which is Walmart's brand, Great Value non-dairy cheddar cheese. That kind that like doesn't melt and it tastes oily and waxy. That's what I put on it. Okay, that would be course 3. Now, course 4, again, would be Hamburger Helper. I would do the 4-cheesy lasagna Hamburger Helper. For course 5, it would be some form of, again, we'd have to incorporate dairy into it again. Maybe an ice cream from when Bluebell had Listeria in it. I would serve Stanley Tucci Listeria-infected Bluebell. Bluebell Listeria. In 2015, Bluebell creameries were called 8 million gallons of ice cream after reports of Listeria monocytogenes. Here we go. Listeria monocytogenes. Monocytogenes. Contamination at multiple facilities. That's what I would serve Stanley Tucci. Now, if he was like, this tastes like Listeria, I'd be like, you know what? You're right. Let me get you something else. I'd go in the freezer and I'd be like, what can I fucking, okay. And then, no. You know what? My final, this is another delicacy for the American middle class. Do y'all remember this? Rice-a-roni. I would give it rice-a-roni. No, but it's the rice-a-roni pasta. It's the rice-a-roni pasta that's garlic and herb. This one! Angel hair pasta with herbs. I love this. Oh my God. I would serve Stanley Tucci this. Stanley Tucci, you fucking liar. Get over to my house ASAP, you and your beautiful wife, and I'm going to cook you pastaroni angel hair pasta with herbs. And I want you to look me in my eyes and tell me it's not the same as an Italian handmade pasta. Inflation has not gotten my girl yet. $1.25 for pastaroni. Hell fucking yeah. These used to be like 40 cents. 40, 50 cents. Man, look, and it's even on sale. $1.79. How about $1.25? Yup. Let's see what's in this. Man, this is making me hungry. Okay, so wheat flour, whey, salt, palm oil. Oh. What? Why? Quick question. Why do you need palm oil in pastaroni? Why is palm oil used? Palm oil is the world's most widely used vegetable oil because it's cheap, efficient, and has uses. Isn't it, like, horrible to harvest, though? It offers a far greater yield at a lower cost of production than other vegetable oils, but it's destroying the planet. Palm oil is a small ingredient in the U.S. diet, but more than half of all packaged products Americans consume contain palm oil. It's found in lipstick, soaps, detergents, and even ice cream. What the fuck? Palm oil, bad. It's high in saturated fat. No, I'm talking about it's bad for the environment. Bad for the environment. The truth about palm oil. This is from Rainforest Action Network. As the food industry has moved away from trans fats, the demand for cheap conflict palm oil has skyrocketed. It can now be found in roughly half of all packaged goods in your local grocery store, from cookies and crackers to toothpaste and laundry detergent. What the fuck? But what is the real cost of palm oil? Palm oil plantations are pushed into the heart of some of the world's most culturally and biologically diverse ecosystems. Conflict palm oil is driving iconic species like the Sumatran, the Megatron orangutan, sorry. Species like the Megatron orangutan, tiger, elephant, and rhino to the brink of extinction. Conflict palm oil perpetuates massive human and labor rights violations as palm oil companies forcibly remove indigenous peoples and local communities from their land for new palm oil plantation development. So it's that mixed with, like, it's devastating. Not only the literal physical devastation to the rainforest of, like, plowing that down to harvest this, but the displacement of natives and the human rights violations. I mean, this is why this, we learned about this in college a little bit. We just glossed over it, I feel like. Child labor, modern day slavery, and other forms of worker exploitation are common occurrences on plantations in Malaysia and Indonesia. Fucking Christ. Too many companies think they can hide the true cost of their products. They think no one will notice. They think increasing profits is an excuse for almost anything. But people like you are speaking out across the globe. Together, let's stand with workers and communities on the front lines of palm oil expansion. Together, we can break the link between the snack foods that line our grocery store shelves and human rights abuses, deforestation, and climate chaos. Will you join this fight? Hell yeah, Rainforest. What was this? Rainforest Action Network. Fighting for people and planet. Hell yeah, go check them out. God, that's devastating. During the pandemic, when all that was, like, you know, everything was paused and we were seeing the canals in Venice clear and some of the smog over LA clear. And, like, when there was that brief moment in time where everything just stopped, I remember seeing some of those positive action reports of, you know, this has improved, this has improved, while obviously holding space for the devastation that COVID was enacting. It's tyrannical reign across the economy and across lives and across health and all that. When everything stopped, there were some interesting reports that came out about this sort of, you know, just even in that brief amount of time, how the world, the environment healed a little bit. And then, of course, we've gone back to raping it for all of its resources and materials. And just go check out Rainforest Action Network. Actually, let's go to, is this a charity? Let's see it on Charity Navigator. Rainforest Action Network. Charity Navigator. Oh, wow. This charity score is 99%, earning it a 4-star rating. If the organization aligns with your passions and values, you can give with confidence. Oh, this is really great, y'all. Okay, period. Anyway, Rice-A-Roni. What the fuck? Okay, maybe I wouldn't serve Stanley Tucci Rice-A-Roni. What, is that what you wanted me to say? Fine, I fucking won't poison Stanley Tucci with Rice-A-Roni. Even though he'd love it. I know he'd love it. Seriously. Palm oil, maltodextrin, corn syrup solids, natural flavor. What the fuck is natural flavor? Modified cornstarch, onion, dried, monosodium glutamate, parsley, dried, garlic, dried, annatto extract, color, sodium caseinate, black pepper extract, rosemary, dried, soy lecithin, sunflower oil, butter, cream, sage, dried, niacin, iron, celery extract, thiamine mononitrate, riboflavin, folic acid. What the fuck is all that doing in my Rice-A-Roni? And it's 24% of your daily sodium recommended intake. Damn. Okay, that would be my 5-course meal for Stanley Tucci. And of course, like I said, I would top it off with a blueberry Red Bull and probably a Diet Coke. I'd give him a Diet Coke over ice with some lemon or lime. Shells and white cheddar. Damn. Okay, guys, I'm loving you. And I'm so excited for Bridgerton Season 3, Part 2. Let me know. Let me know if you're also Benedict lovers. Because if I am holding it down for Benedict Nation, that is a title I will hold with the utmost regard. With the utmost respect and regard for Benedict Nation. Benedict Bridgerton, Brittany Broski collab. We got B to the fourth power. B quad drip boopled. Quadrupled? Shut the fuck up. What comes after tripled? Tripled again. Flawless, yeah. Y'all listen to Yeet. What comes after tripled? Yeah, quadrupled. Right? I mean, you would say to the fourth power, but quadrupled. Guys, please go register to vote. Headcount.org is in the description below, as well as some Brittany Broski merch. If you, like, care, if you want some Broski Report merch, fine, it's there. Whatever, broski.shop. I'm not going to, like, beg. I don't care. Stop. Okay, love you guys. I'll see you next week. Seriously. Okay, bye.